Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Tracy McClure. Coming up today, we go down under where Australian Cardinal George Pell kicks off World Youth Day celebrations with a mega mass on Sydney Harbour as Pope Benedict continues a period of rest outside Sydney. And the general manager of St. Peter's tells pilgrims how security procedures affect visits to the Basilica and offers a tip to clergy who'd like to celebrate Mass there. Well, we begin today's program where else but in Australia, where Pope Benedict continues a period of rest outside Sydney before taking up a full schedule of public events beginning Thursday. On Tuesday, the official beginning of World Youth Day celebrations, Australian Cardinal George Pell presided a big mass on Sydney's harbour. Emer McCarthy has more.
Welcome to Sydney.
Hundreds of thousands of young pilgrims flooded Barangaroo, an open wharf east of Darling Harbour in Sydney Tuesday evening, carrying their national flags and wearing T-shirts emblazoned with the World Youth Day logo and the names of their local diocese. The mass marked the end of their four-year journey to Sydney, the beginning of 5 days of events, prayer and encounter which make up the World Youth Day experience. Sydneysiders were also treated to a live broadcast of the Mass on giant screens, beamed across the city at various venues including the Domain, Sydney Opera House and Darling Harbour. These images, projected in the heart of the city at the end of the working day, underlined the central message of today's opening Mass, an outstretched hand to secular society. To come, take a look and listen.
Pilgrims of the world, welcome to the opening Mass of World Youth Day 2008 at Barangaroo, Sydney, Australia.
In fact, Cardinal Pell began his homily by welcoming everyone everywhere who is lost, distressed, exhausted or without hope to hear Christ welcoming them home.
Young or old, woman or man, Christ is still calling those who are suffering to come to him for healing, as he has for 2,000 years. The causes of the wounds are secondary, whether they be drugs or alcohol, family breakups, the lusts of the flesh, loneliness or a death. Perhaps even the emptiness of success.
Cardinal Pell pushed home the message that Christ's call reaches out beyond boundaries and above all to those lost sheep without a shepherd.
Christ's call is to all who are suffering, not just to Catholics or other Christians, but especially to those without religion. Christ is calling you home to love, healing, and community.
Comparing the drought of hope and faith in today's overtired society to the devastating drought racking large parts of Australia, Cardinal Pell said we can never be without hope while we can still choose.
While there's life, there's always the option of hope. And with Christian hope comes faith and love. Secular wisdom claims that leopards don't change their spots. But we Christians believe in the power of the Spirit to convert and change persons away from evil to good, from fear and uncertainty to faith and hope.
As the World Youth Day cross and icon wound their way through the tens of thousands of young boys and girls gathered at Barangaroo, the final stage of a four-year-long journey across continents and oceans, Cardinal Pell appealed to those gathered before him or listening from their homes not to spend their lives sitting on the fence or keeping their options open, because, he said, happiness comes from meeting our obligations.
Where do you stand? Are you ready to move? To be a disciple of Jesus requires discipline, especially self-discipline. The practice of self-control won't make you perfect. It hasn't with me. But self-control is necessary to develop and protect the love in our hearts and prevent others, especially our family and friends, from being hurt by our lapses into nastiness or laziness.
Cardinal Pell then gave a gentle reminder to the young ones as they get caught up in the frenzy of the next 5 days not to forget to listen and pray. because, he said, the Lord's prophecy to his apostles that they would be his witnesses to the ends of the earth can only be fulfilled if these young men and women carry the message of hope home to the real world of their parishes, study and jobs, beyond World Youth Day, Sydney, 2008. I'm Emma McCarthy.
Well, Eunice Villemere, a student from Vancouver, flew all the way from Canada to be there with the Pope for World Youth Day. She told me how she and her 19 friends managed to pay their expensive airfares, but she says the sacrifice was definitely worth it.
I had to fundraise a lot, and I was paying for it just because I didn't want my parents to pay for it, because this is kind of an experience that I wanted for myself. But we did a lot of fundraising at church, at our parish, and our parishioners at St. Patrick's, which is the parish that we're from, really supported us. And we put on a whole bunch of like dinner and dances and car washes and food sales after 9 o'clock mass every Sunday. So yeah, we had a lot of support from our parish.
Why did you really want to come so much to be there with the Pope as he celebrates World Youth Day?
Well, you know, when you're thinking about the things that you want to do in your life, or when I was thinking about the things that I wanted to do in my life, one of them was to see the Pope. Because I think that young people, people like me, are at points in their life where there's a lot of opportunities open and a lot of things that they can do. And it's easy to get confused, and it's easy to choose maybe a path that wasn't the best one. And so I guess from the Pope and from the church, I think young people are looking for answers and I guess guidance to make better decisions as well. Just because, yeah, it's hard with all the things that you're getting surrounded by. And I think the church is really good at leading us to the places where would be good for us in the future.
Well, that sort of youthful enthusiasm is catching. Even older folks like Ted Richardson, who is regional director of the church's Apostleship for the Sea, are getting caught up in all the excitement and are finding themselves falling in love again with the church. In fact, it is an act of love simply to get to Sydney. Many Australians like Ted, who is taking some 100 young people from Brisbane in the northeast down to Sydney, are driving more than 12 hours to get there. The Pope's visit to Australia, he says, finally puts the country on the map. And now everybody will get an idea of just how vast Australia really is.
It is an amazing and thrilling, even for me, just to be part of it, just in our own way. I'm 52, and I'm excited about what's happening. Last night I was at the airport greeting pilgrims coming in from America and from Canada and from Spain, and it just blows me away how exciting and how vibrant some of these young people are. It just makes me feel younger again. I wish I could take more of a part in it.
Well, tell us a little bit more about some of these young people that you've been meeting. You just said they're at the airport yesterday. What are they saying to you, and are they actually going to be going with you to Sydney?
Well, they're all going at different times. I think there's about 180 flights just here into my own city in Brisbane. And we're meeting all these planes, and they're all staying in parishes, what we call Bris Day. We've got masses in all the churches and prayer services, ecumenical services. Because what we didn't really understand fully, that how many other churches, other than the Catholic Church, want to participate in World Youth Day, which is a terrific ecumenical event as well. It's not just Roman Catholic that we have. People from the Episcopalian Church in America, or Anglican Church as we know it in Australia. We've got some Baptist people coming through. And this is an amazing event that actually brings young people together from all sorts of areas. Last night I met, 40-odd Canadians that came in from Alberta. And they joined it. And I would have thought they'd be tired. They'd been flying for something like 26 hours. But they hopped off the plane. They were just excited to be in Australia. And all of a sudden, I said, this is 11 o'clock at night. And I said, you're going home to bed. They said, we can't sleep. We're too excited. And I think, wow, you know, that excitement, if it sustains itself right the way through this whole episode, I think it's going to be a fantastic event. The pilgrims are just thrilled to participate in it. And just to understand our culture, the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders are putting on all sorts of events for them to say this is what we are as Catholics, and how they they work as Catholics in their communities and things. I suppose it's an opportunity to educate the world for us in Australia on what we are and where we are. We had one group fly in from Spain, I think it was, and they landed in Sydney. And they thought Adelaide was a suburb of Sydney. So they were sort of stranded in Sydney, because Adelaide is a 10-hour drive from Sydney on a good day. And so we had to try and get them onto planes and fly them over to Adelaide for their days in the diocese in Adelaide before going to World Youth Day. I think a lot of people think it's a bit like Europe, Australia, but it takes you days to get anywhere. You can fit Texas in America 7 times in our state. And it's a big country, and not great population, but a very big country to move around. And I think people are starting to realise that we are a very big place, but we're a long way from anywhere where we're down under here, and it's a long way to travel to us.
The distances being what they are, obviously not as many people as those who would like to go can go to the World Youth Day, for example. How is that event and perhaps some of the other papal events being covered by the media? Are they being nationally televised?
Yeah, there's a lot of terrific coverage by the media. Very favourable coverage of all the different things that the papal events and what's taking place and where. The Fox cable of having a station fully devoted to the World Youth Day events. And it'll be 24 hours a day. They'll have coverage of everything that's happening. And a lot of the commercial channels also are running stories every day on what's taking place and when and where.
How many Catholics are there in Australia, Ted? And how do you think people from, say, the other Christian churches and other faiths regard the Pope?
Yeah, I think everybody has that incredible respect for the Pope and for our church. We're only 25 million people, so it's not a big population given the area we're in. And about 40% of us are Roman Catholic. So it's quite a large percentage. We're the largest church group in Australia. It doesn't matter who they are. I think even whether you're Islamic, you have a very good, strong respect for the Holy Father. And likewise, I think the Holy Father has a very strong respect for everybody else. So in Australia, we are very tolerant of all races and all religions, and it just passes on. It's just a natural way of us as Australians to be that way. Yeah, I think he'd be welcomed by everybody.
What are some of the things that Catholics in Australia are hoping that the Pope will say to them?
If they're expecting anything from the Pope to the Australian youth, would be to be the Church, to be who they are today, and to live in Christ's love. And I think that's what comes through. I've seen young people printing out all sorts of T-shirts and slogans on it, like, you know, "We love you, Benny," and "I'm hooked on Benny," and, you know, "Do away with drugs if you need a drug, you know, be hooked on Benny," sort of thing. I think it's fantastic attitude of young people, that they're showing a different way of life from other youngs that aren't involved in the church or have, for whatever reason, left the church. And they bring this life and vibrance back into it, and they're very outspoken. They're ready to take charge and say that we are the church, and that to me is really good. From our side, from not just the apostleship of the sea, but from the church's side, I see a real strength and growth. The people, you know, I've had people say to me, you know, "Our church is getting old and getting tired. I don't know whether we're relevant in the community anymore." And then I see all these young people coming in, and I see the energy that they have. I was driving the bus with them yesterday, and they must have said the rosary 3 times. They had prayer on several different occasions where they just stopped and decided to have a little prayer session. And I thought, this is young people living the church. And we're not old, and we're not irrelevant, and we're not disappearing because of our age or anything else. It's only the older ones are sitting in the parishes that are not getting out and getting involved in their church anymore. But the young people want to get involved and want to be part of it, and they're the future. They're giving me so much inspiration for what's happening that I'm just falling in love with the church all over again. I think it's just a fantastic feeling. And you get empowered by the youth, and I think that's the real benefit to World Youth Day. It's not just the youth that are getting all this benefit and build-up, we're getting it as well.
Ted Richardson is Regional Director of the Church's Apostleship for the Sea. If you lived through them, you'll never forget them. The hot spring days following Pope John Paul II's death in April 2005, when millions of pilgrims patiently lined Rome's streets to pay their last respects to the Pope that so many loved. Millions poured through St. Peter's Basilica to mourn the Pope lying in state, and in the years to follow his funeral, even more have quietly queued to pray at his tomb in the Basilica's grottos. Just how does the Vatican manage such enormous crowds, over and above the normal daily flow of tourists and pilgrims? Well, in this, part three of a four-part series of conversations with Cristina Carlostella, general manager of the Fabrica, or Fabrique of St. Peter's, we look at how security has changed over the last few years and have a tip or two for clergy who'd like to celebrate Mass in the Basilica.
The visitors' flow has been absolutely enormous after John Paul II's death. And that has caused quite a number of preoccupations and worries, because it is the management of crowds, which is, I think, one of the major problems that quite a number of administrations have to deal with right now. The Fabrique of St. Peter is not really involved in that aspect. Let me explain this. For the crowds that are walking into the Basilica, it is actually the security bodies of the Italian state and of the Vatican police that actually manages that at the St. Peter Square level.
Let me just explain to our listeners that since 2001, after the September 11th attacks, we who work in the Vatican have gradually seen greater security around the Basilica, around Piazza San Pietro, St. Peter's Square. We, in the last few years, have now been seeing it's been cordoned off with a chain link fence all around the outside of the Basilica. Even the colonnade around the outside of the square have now also been fenced off with metal fences. And you'll find police, Italian police, in little carts going around the square and providing security around the perimeters, especially of the square. So we have seen these major changes, unfortunately, in the last few years. And people are having to go into the square through metal detectors now as well. So explain, though, actually getting into the Basilica and into the grottos, what do tourists or pilgrims have to face?
Well, once they've passed through the security checks, as I said, managed by the Italian police in St. Peter's Square, they have to leave all their packages or bags in a guardaroba area, which is a cloakroom. And then they can access inside the Basilica. And even in the Vatican grottos, they can go freely into that space once they have passed that security check. Now,
sorry, but is it one line? Because it's been a while since I've had to go through there. It's two lines. One line to get into the Basilica and another line to get into the grotto?
No, it's the same. I'm sorry, it is the same. It is the same line. Basically, what happens is that we do have a merge area on the right-hand side of the narthex of the Basilica, and that is for visitors or groups coming from the Vatican museums into the Basilica. Now, that is an area where we also have a checkpoint, let us say, a small little checkpoint, so that we are sure that visitors coming from the Vatican museums have left all their bags and then can accede into the Basilica proper. But besides this other check control in St. Peter's Square, there are no other controls. We do have visitors who would just like to go to the cupola, for example, who would just like to go up and get this extraordinary experience of going up to that height and getting this panorama, this splendid panorama of Rome from the cupola. Now, the cupola is managed by the Fabrique of St. Peter. So that is another, let us say, crucial checkpoint. You've got the ticket office to the cupola, and that's where we have some San Pietrini who actually control the tourist flow and the visitors flow to the cupola.
You have to explain the San Pietrini. It means little St. Peter's, but it also has another meaning, doesn't it?
Yeah, San Pietrini is the term that is affiliated to the workmen that actually, the custodians, let us say, of the Basilica, San Pietrini. Now, San Pietrini is also the same term that is used for the cobblestones around Rome. And these are the square little cobblestones that you have all over the pavements, the road pavements in Rome. It's called San Pietrini. So I always joke with our San Pietrini of the Fabrica that I think that the other San Pietrini, that is the road pavement, are terrible, but not our San Pietrini, because our San Pietrini are, really, we do have now, I'm not just speaking as the general manager, but really we're very proud of our San Pietrini staff, because they do an excellent job. They run work shifts that are very heavy sometimes, 24-hour, you know. For example, when John Paul II died, those days, which were very, very moving, it was a very moving experience, but we had a work shifts 24-hour round the clock within the Basilica because of all those faithful and visitors that were coming to pay their respects to John Paul II. So they really are a fantastic group of men who really dedicate their entire, you know, life to the San Pietro. I mean, they have such a veneration and devotion to St. Peter themselves that is just really very moving to have such a motivated group of people.
Now, they're the ones who are responsible for setting up the altar on the steps outside this basilica when the Pope gives a special mass outside, or for all the events held in St. Peter's Square as well?
Well, there we do also share the responsibility with Governatorato, La Floreria Vaticana, for example. There are quite a number of teams of workmen that, you know, we try to sort of share and help each other out there. But most of the San Pietrini's role and job is the surveillance of the basilica proper, so inside the basilica or at the entrance of the basilica. And they carry out, of course, all the maintenance work. And again, there, for example, in setting up for the liturgies, the mass liturgies within the basilica, you do have a very strong cooperation with these other teams of workmen that are from the Vatican, from the Governatorato. They're managed by the Governatorato. So Governatorato and Fabrique of St. Peter very much collaborate very strongly when we have to set up the interior of the basilica for liturgical ceremonies or for other events. But just the custodian aspect, that is just surveilling the inside the basilica, that's up to the San Pietrini and the Fabrica in St. Peter.
And are you also the ones, or they would be the ones, who set up the nativity scene and the big Christmas tree in St. Peter's Square at Christmas time?
No. Actually, the one that's in St. Peter's Square is actually designed and set up by the Governatorato. But, however, there is a competition every year, because our San Pietrini have had, by tradition, the task of setting up another crash scene inside the basilica. And with all respect to the crash scenes in St. Peter's Square, I have to say that the crash scenes designed by, especially in recent years, designed by our own San Pietrini, is really very, very beautiful. I won't put a comparison there, but I have to say that every year I find myself congratulating our San Pietrini also for the aesthetic level and the loving care that they put in setting up that crush scene inside the basilica. It's usually in the chapel area or the area right after the baptistry, to the left hand side, to the small nave on the left of the inside the basilica.
So we'll tell our listeners, if they're here in Rome at Christmas time, to check that out.
Absolutely, because every year they put an element that's different every year. So I think last year they put a waterfall, a real waterfall, a small little waterfall in the crash scene. It was very, very beautiful.
Are you in charge in any way for the little individual liturgies that go on, the daily masses in St. Peter's, also the confessions in the various languages?
For the confessions, not really, because you do have the penitenceria of the Vatican that really takes care of that. The management, that is the cleaning, the maintenance of the confessionals, yes, that is up to us. For the daily masses, it's really up to the Vicariato, the Vatican Vicariate office, that actually runs that. But of course, the Archpriest of the Basilica of St. Peter is also the head, of course, is our Archpriest of the Canons of St. Peter. And so together with that group, the canons and also the Vicariate office, whose headquarters are also here in the headquarters of the Fabrique, we do manage the daily mass liturgies. The one superior who's actually really looks after this area is the delegate of the Fabrica di San Pietro, His Excellency Bishop Lanzani. He is the one who actually looks after the programming together with Cardinal Comastri in the daily mass schedule. Priests who come from all over the world can actually reserve their daily mass in the sacristy directly, or they send us a request. They send to the Fabrica di San Pietro, to the Vicariate office, a request to say mass at a particular altar inside the Basilica.
How do they do that? They go on to the Fabrique of St. Peter's from the Vatican website.
Right, exactly, exactly.
My last question then, you've already mentioned some of them, but the challenges that you hope to tackle in the future.
This is a very, very nice question, but also a challenging question. I think really my real concern is that any person from any part of the world, any country in the world, whatever their cultural background is, whatever their religious background is, may come to this site and have such an overall extraordinary experience that, and somehow either the beauty of this extraordinary site, the spirituality of this extraordinary site, might change something in their life.
Thanks there to Cristina Carlo Stella, General Manager of the Fabrica of St. Peter's. That's the Vatican office responsible for the maintenance and daily care of the Basilica. And that concludes today's program. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.